If you get good value from it, if it creates conversations, that's one of the main goals for us. You don't want to be stretched out too thin, though, where you're just doing data all day, but not actually having the opportunity to apply it.
Welcome to the First Beat Sports Podcast, where we talk with coaches and sports scientists to explore the latest in how performance monitoring is making a difference in the NCAA and pro sports alike. We're going to connect you with practical advice from the best in the business to help you take your athletes to the next level.
On the line today is Jaime Fernandez. Jaime is the Assistant Performance Enhancement Coach for the University of Arizona Strength and Conditioning Program, specifically working with the Wildcats Women Basketball Program. Among the topics Jaime will discuss will be the importance of being persistent, diversity of the coaching staff and team, role of technology in strength and conditioning, return to play protocol with First Beat Sports, this year's historical Final Four and championship game appearance, and matching the intensity from games in drills. He will also go into building relationships with athletes, coaching, and support staff. Now, here's Benjamin Jensen, host of First Beat Sports Podcast.
All right, Jaime, thanks for coming to speak with us today. Appreciate you taking the time.
I appreciate it, Ben. Glad to be here with you guys. Excited for this.
Okay, so let's go ahead and start the way we always do. Give us a little background and talk us through how you ended up on the University of Arizona staff.
I'll give the very brief version. So I was born in Mexico, in the state of Chihuahua. Most of my childhood was there and went back and forth as I got older to Colorado a lot. My dad worked in construction, so he had a seasonal job. Eventually, we moved to the U States permanently. My mom was tired of going back and forth and she just wanted the whole family to be together. So I attended high school in Colorado, got into sports, played soccer there. You know, I played it in Mexico, but I started getting a little bit into weightlifting. I was not a good weightlifter. It was pretty sad. I was 155. And that kind of started my interest in just sports in general. Once I graduated high school, went to not a community college, a smaller college there, Fort Lewis College, and went through a degree through a variety of majors that I thought I wanted to do. Eventually went back home, attended a community college. I got married when I was 20. So both my wife and I got married shortly after our associate's degree. We moved out. We're around for a while, and then we eventually ended up at BYU Idaho in 2012. So I got married in 2008, didn't get back to school till 2012. When I was applying at BYU Idaho, you had to declare your major, and I didn't know what I was going to pick. But as I was scrolling through the options, I saw exercise physiology that caught my eye, and I declared as that. One of the first classes I had there was strength and conditioning. And had a really good teacher. He mentored me a lot as far as kind of guiding me to what I should go. But it piqued my interest when he talked about, well, one of the things you could do with this in this degree is go on to be a strength coach. And he talked to me about there's strength coaches at like private side, military, college, professional sports. The college one caught my eye. So as I was there, I started putting out feelers and trying to just research what it would take to get to this level. And what I started doing was reaching out to institutions that had a good kinesiology program or exercise phys or something related. I got accepted into Wisconsin. And as soon as I got accepted, I started bugging the director at the time. His name is escaping me right now, but he's currently still there. He's just in a different role. John Detman. There we go. So I started bugging him. This was like, I got an acceptance in April of 2014. And right away, I started emailing him. I think I eventually just irritated him. He got back to me and he said, hey, you know what? Just come and see me when you're on campus. As soon as we got to campus, I went and sought out his office and found him. And I told him, like, I don't know if you remember me emailing you like a bunch of times. He's like, oh, yeah, yeah. So I had me send him my resume again, did that. I didn't hear back from the guy. And he said, I'll reach out after around Thanksgiving. I did the same thing. I started bugging him over and over. And he eventually called me before Thanksgiving. He's like, why don't you come over? We'll talk. I didn't know at the time, but it was kind of like a semi-formal interview. I interviewed with him and then an assistant that was there. They told me like, well, we'll bring you on for the spring semester for soccer to help us out. I was like, oh, that's cool. And I was very naive as far as I didn't have anybody to help me get into the field in a sense, you know, it was sheer bugging him. Like I was very persistent because later on I found out that myself and another intern, we were kind of backup options. They had some people there that didn't work out for one reason or another. They had committed, last second they pulled out. So that kind of got my foot in the door. And I started with working with men's soccer that first semester. That semester after that, John Detman stepped out to a different role, and they brought in Eric Helland as the director of strength and conditioning and Kevin Schultz as the director of Olympic sports. And I started working with different teams. So they had me work with volleyball over the summer. I guess I'd done a good enough job with soccer that they allowed me to have the lightweight rowers to program for. So that was kind of fun. I spent a semester doing that. And then the whole pretty much academic year of 2015, 2016, I went to the Kohl Center and worked with men's basketball with Eric Helland and men and women's hockey with Jim Snyder. So that's the first time I got to meet him. And women's basketball with Renee. Spent some time there, you know, until I graduated, got my master's degree. I foolishly thought that I would just have jobs lined up. That was not the case. After talking with like Snyder, with Kevin Schultz, I quickly realized that I'm going to have to do another internship at a different location to, you know, just grow my resume. So what I did is I sent about 70 emails to different Power Five schools that I would like to intern for. It was the same context to everybody. I said, hey, I have a family. By this point, we had two kids. So I'm like, I can't just go for a summer and then come back. Like, I can commit to you for a year if you allow me to just work part-time and allow me to have a job so that I can provide for my family, but I'll give you some hours. One of the first schools that reached back was Arizona, and they were pretty cool about it. This was like in September of 2016. I heard back from a couple other schools, but eventually we felt like, okay, we'll do Arizona if it felt like the right place. But as time got closer, as we turned the year 2017, they called me again and they said, are you really going to come? I'm like, yeah, I'll come over. I remember having a talk with Jim Krumpos. He's a senior associate athletic director and director of strength and conditioning here now. But he called me because later on I found out he didn't really think I would move. He didn't believe it. I was going from Wisconsin to Arizona for an unpaid internship and moving my family. So it was rough, but I got a really good understanding of the person he is, because the first conversation I had with him was, he said, hey man, you're qualified to have a full-time position, and I want you to look for that. If you can't find anything, then we'll be your backup. And, you know, I didn't find anything. So we moved to Arizona in May 2017, came in, great staff here at the time. It was Jim Krumpos, Robert Harris. He's now gone, but they helped a ton, man. And, you know, I moved right place, right time. Once I got here, Jim told me there's a likelihood that we're going to open up another full-time position in August. You keep doing what you're doing, you're the main candidate. You know, things worked out. I applied for it, interviewed, and he gave me the position, offered it. We took it, and this was August of 2017. So I became full-time, started off with cross country at Cheer, where my team's in, and I was his right-hand man for baseball for that first year. Year after, things started shifting around. Football staff that was here got let go. They had some of the Olympic teams, so we took them over. I took over tennis teams, jumpers, eventually the sprinters. And then it's an ever-changing world. Last year, I took over women's basketball. I had some of the teams taken off my plate, but it's a process.
Yeah, so you've already had a variety of teams just at University of Arizona, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And I'd say, yeah, just from the strength and conditioning world, I'd say you had probably one of the best opportunities to learn from Coach Helland and from Jim Snyder up at Wisconsin. I mean, those are two guys that just really well respected. And of course, we know both have been first beat clients.
Yeah, absolutely. Snyder he's like a mad scientist, man. Like the way he thinks about things is awesome. He's one of the smartest individuals I know. And he's very detailed. And one of the biggest things he taught me was to always have a why. You know, it might not be the right answer, but as long as you know why you're doing something, that's important. So him and Kevin Schultz were probably the two that impacted the most my career from Wisconsin. I still keep in touch with both of them.
Nice. Yeah, I've noticed one thing with Coach Snyder. If, you know, we connect to talk about first beat, I literally just turn into the sponge. I mean, I can answer some basic questions for him about the system. But other than that, yeah, I just love listening to how he's just implementing training data with these guys. And yeah, always learn something from him.
Absolutely.
So for the 4 years you've been there, what are some of the jobs that you've done? I guess one of the biggest things on campus is recruiting now. So are you involved in the recruiting process with the women's basketball team?
To a certain degree, I am. It depends on the recruit. One of the recruits we have coming in for 2022, it was a verbal commit. It was Maya Naji, sister of Zeke. So she's our highest rated recruit in the history of the program. Her dad is very involved and interested in strength and conditioning. So for them, it was a big piece. So, you know, I played a role with that. We did a couple presentations for them, for the family, and I had to set up a PowerPoint and just discuss how I use my time in the weight room what my process is throughout the year, how I lay out the different cycles and what we do during each phase. There's some recruits that they don't need me for that. So, you know, I'm just available to the coaching staff. Like if they need me, I'll be available for that. Similar role that I've played in with other teams a little bit. You know, when I was helping out with baseball a lot, sometimes we played a little bit of a role. Sometimes we didn't.
Okay, cool. And you kind of have an interesting roster there with the Wildcat women's basketball program. So almost half of the roster being from foreign countries. Is that planned and how you recruited, or is that just kind of how it panned out?
I think partially it pans out that way. However, like with Coach Adia, her husband, Coach Salvo, he's from Italy. So he has a lot of international ties and he's got pretty good recruiting system from Europe. He has a lot of connections over there. So I think that helps us greatly with his background. Like I said, from over there, he's got connections to a lot of the coaches, youth coaches to that area. So they like some of the foreign players. They like girls from Spain. You know, we've had a good amount of Spaniards on the team. Ends up being pretty good though. The dynamic of the team is awesome once they get here.
Mm-hmm. And so being a native Spanish speaker, have you ever had any friendly debates with the players from Spain about who speaks the more pure form of the language?
We haven't gotten into that, but it is nice to connect with some of them in Spanish. Like when they come in, some of them, obviously Spanish is their first language. So if they're not as comfortable speaking English, it's almost a sense of they have another person they can connect with a little bit more when they learn that I speak Spanish as well. It's fun. It's allowed me to make some deeper connections with some of them. And sometimes that helps out, whether it be the coaching staff or athletic trainers, just to help relay messages. Sometimes they can get lost in translation when they're talking to them, as far as maybe they're not delivering the message they actually wanted and the player's not hearing what the trainer is saying or the coach is saying.
Yeah, I would think that'd be a huge value. I mean, it's already, you know, college is a big enough shock for everybody coming in. And if you're going to come from halfway across the world too, and the whole language barrier, that's definitely a valuable skill to have there. So if we're looking kind of over the last, let's say, 4 or 5 years, what have you seen in the strength and conditioning as far as like the role of the technology for the sports science side?
It's becoming more and more ingrained in the field, and I don't think it's going away anytime soon. What I've seen is that it's almost like an arms race. If you get too caught up with that, it could be, I don't want to say detrimental, man, but I've heard and been around some coaches where they say that they bought this piece of technology just because they're trying to outdo their rival college, but they don't get a proper use out of it. Mm-hmm. If you get good value from it, if it creates conversations, that's one of the main goals for us. You don't want to be stretched out too thin though, where you're just doing data all day, but not actually having the opportunity to apply it. I think speaking to that, right, you're seeing that there's more and more colleges that are hiring directors of sports science, whereas I feel like that position was non-existent maybe 10, 15 years ago. And they're now having individuals that are slowly gathering data, giving it to the coaches in a way that they can understand it and how to make changes or implement new programs or new training strategies based on it.
Is it something you enjoy, kind of having both roles as far as you're physically in the gym doing the strength and conditioning while also assisting with the sports science?
Yeah, I've gotten to learn about a ton of different technologies that I didn't know were out there, but it's provided value. Like I said, it's growing. I mean, if you see job postings now, there's people that will ask like, well, if you have experience with Catapult or with First Beat or with something specific, they prefer that. Mm-hmm. It's being used and it's not going away. It's been enjoyable. Initially, when I first got into it, I was very like impressed by every technology. I was like, oh man, this is cool. We can definitely use this. This is also pretty cool. And it became very clear, very fast. It's like, you got to slow down and really pick and choose what's really going to help you and cause it on a scale where we have a lot of athletes. So something can be used easily with multiple teams, multiple athletes, and get good data from it.
Definitely. There's always going to be something newer and shinier coming out. There's always going to be that.
Yes.
I mean, first off, it's a bit late, but congratulations on the season. I mean, Final Four run, national championship game. Well done.
Thank you.
So with this, definitely not like a normal season. Just how was it to coach through this season? You know, you've been through a lot of different seasons before. How was it with this season with, you know, kind of COVID restrictions and everything like that?
It was extremely difficult. I hope we don't have a year like that ever again, but I'm glad to have experienced it. You know, for better or worse, I think it made me a better coach in a lot of aspects. One of the things we did here, you know, initially became the issue of, well, how many people can we have in a certain area? And because of the spacing rules. So we kind of made some makeshift weight rooms in a couple of places. We have an indoor facility that's pretty big. We took some equipment there. We took med balls, we took ladders, and we were able to space out our athletes a little bit more there. So that served as a training area. In the football stadium, on the concourse area that's pretty open, we took squat racks to that spot. And one of the things that we did, and we brought along First Beat for this, was We got a good amount of heart rate monitors to use for those first couple of weeks when the athletes were back. One of our biggest concerns was the transition to returning to play, because a lot of these kids had been not doing anything, let's be honest, since March when we kind of shut down. And, you know, by this point, it's like August, September. So it's been 5-6 months. And if they haven't done anything, that was a big concern for our medical department. So what we did is we used FirstBeat for the first couple of weeks just to look at heart rates. You know, if they were getting to a zone too high and if they weren't recovering, we were pulling them. You know, we had athletic trainers there with us working very closely, and we wouldn't have gotten through it, honestly, if we didn't have some of those tools and if we didn't have a very good interdepartment collaboration. You know, we came up with tests and we'd have them do whatever, a run. They got to a high heart rate zone. We gave them 3 to 5 minutes to recover and see if they could do the next bout. If they weren't, they were being pulled. We're also, as a department, implemented a couple of years ago, the 50, 40, 30, 20, 10 rule that came out from the NSCA and the CSCCA. It's kind of a joint effort that they've done, and it's worked pretty well for us. We want to minimize a lot of soft tissue injuries, and those tend to happen in the first couple of weeks when you return, especially if you're up in the volume too aggressively.
It sounds like you just had some great collaboration between strength staff, athletic trainers. A lot of times you don't see that. So it sounds like you just had a really good situation there to move forward with that.
Absolutely. And it continued throughout the year. Once we got, I'm going to go specifically to basketball, but pretty much every team went through this, right? As we got into the season, and there's always the threat of games being canceled because of a positive or something like that. Mm-hmm. We had false positives. The girls got into, once we got into games, I mean, they were testing pretty much almost every day. And I know that was hard on them. It's, you know, your day off. Well, you're still going to have to come in and test early in the morning. Mm-hmm. And behind the scenes, that was our athletic trainers running that, like our athletic trainer for basketball, Jessie Johnson. She did an awesome job, administered more tests than she probably cares to do in her whole lifetime in 1 year. But it was hard in that aspect, like testing every day, wearing the mask for practices, for the weight room. In a way, we have to become the mask police. That was not fun. But, you know, slowly things started to open up. But even in the weight room, it was, we have a big facility here at Arizona. It's about 32,000 square feet for the Olympics weight room. So we were used to being able to handle 5 teams in here at once. Well, that number got drastically reduced. So part of it was scheduling. We had to be very strategic with scheduling times and when teams were going to be in here, making sure everybody had their mask on, the way we were sanitizing after the teams were done. And like I said, for basketball practices too, those girls, man, having to wear masks for 2-3 hour practice, that's rough. And they got through that. And like I said, credit to them, because it was a long season. It was a lot of testing. And thankfully, we got through it. We got all the way to the end. So, you know, I don't think we would expect it at the beginning.
Yeah, and kind of continuing on that. So while you're in the bubble for the entire NCAA tournament, obviously it was a unique experience. Did this make your job any easier, or was this a lot more difficult being in the bubble?
No, being in the bubble was in a lot of aspects easier. There were some aspects that were pretty hard. So one of the things, I never dealt with this, but I know for like our athletic trainer standpoint, for Jesse's standpoint, she didn't have to worry about setting up the testing. So, you know, we had testing times that we were told we had to be there every day to test and so forth. Other areas that were kind of rough was just, it was very restrictive. And I understand why, you know, they were the fear of having to cancel the tournament because of a positive or something like that. When we first got to the bubble, the first, like, I want to say 4 or 5 days, is we had one meal as a team. The other 2 meals had to be by yourself in the hotel room.
Oh man.
So we spent a lot of time staring at 4 walls. After that, then we started having 2 meals a day where we could be together in a meeting space. You saw, I don't know if you did, probably saw the whole fiasco with the weight room stuff.
Oh yeah.
Once we got a weight room, once we got some weight areas, that was kind of nice because we were able to schedule lifting times every day. And to be honest, like, I scheduled those a lot of times. It was mostly the staff that would go, you know, because of the nature of how close the games were. There were, I think we did a couple lifts as a team, but mostly it was the staff. And I understand, you know, give you a chance to get out of your room, do something else, get your heart rate up, get a little workout in. They did allow us to schedule some things. We went out to like the San Antonio Zoo. We went out on the river close by. So that was kind of nice. Took us on a little boat tour. But it was easier in some aspects, like I said, a little bit harder in others. The harder part, I think, was more psychologically, being in there for so long without a lot of communication to the outside world in a way.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you guys obviously handled it really well. Yeah, that was nice to see with the whole weight room fiasco, how, I mean, just how many people rallied around that to make something happen quickly, because that was subpar, I would say.
Yes, to say the least.
To say the least. So what was the atmosphere like with the team? You know, we just made it to the championship. All right. Oh, okay. We got to play Stanford for the third time in 3 months. I mean, was it excitement? Was it happy to go into it? Or was it more like kind of annoying to play this team again for the third time?
Initially, I think when Stanford won their game against South Carolina, we were like, yeah, of course it has to be Stanford that's there. But once we took care of business, I think there was a lot of excitement from the team. I don't think a lot of people saw us beating UConn in the Final Four, especially in the manner that we did. Mm-hmm. And the team as a whole, the athletes were really hyped up. They were excited. They had the mentality of there's no way we're going to let Stanford beat us three times in the year. I mean, ultimately it happened, right? It was a good game. We kept it close. We had an opportunity to win it. And I don't think you can ask for much more than that.
Yeah, definitely. And going back a little bit before the bubble and everything. So you did have one gap where four games in a row were canceled, Pac-12 games, which gave you over 2.5 weeks without a game. Kind of how did you handle that? What did you do during that time?
During that time, we tried to keep a schedule as much as we could. Coach Adia did a great job of having some practices that were hard to try to get their heart rates up, to try to get them to be more game-like, if you will, so we wouldn't miss a beat once we got back to it. The harder parts with that was just the uncertainty of, well, we don't know when we're going to get to play again. And, you know, as far as weight room, it did give me, that was a time where it gave me a little bit more, I want to say more priority to the weight room, because we knew at least, okay, we're not going to play this week. So we have at least this much time till the next game. We were able to get into the weight room, lift a little bit harder, a little bit higher intensities, slightly more volume. Throughout the whole year, we used First Beat to gauge recovery and stuff like that, and what heart rate zones they were hitting. So it was very crucial during that time, especially for practices, where I was relaying that information to either one of the assistant coaches or to Coach Adia herself, was, hey, these players are getting to this certain load, just letting you know. And she would either pull them aside and be like, okay, they're going to do something different. It was a time of at least just managing the athletes, managing load, and just trying to keep them fresh for whenever the next game was.
So yeah, that's an awesome situation, I have to say, because for the head coach to have the confidence to listen to what you and the other staff members have to say about, you know, how practice is going, if anybody needed to possibly be out or cut back on practice. I mean, that's a huge deal.
I 100% agree. And I think that's, at least for me, what I've seen is one of the biggest values of technology is if you can get your coach to have that confidence in the data that you're giving them, it makes a world of a difference. It creates conversations with her. And that happened this whole year where I don't think there was a single practice where we had to do conditioning or extra conditioning after. You know, she bought into the data for heart rate. We use that pretty much year round during the whole season.
I'm sure the players didn't mind not having the extra conditioning. That would just be my assumption.
Oh, yeah. They're not a fan if you have to do some more running. Practice is pretty hard.
Yeah. We're going to hit the quick fire round. So I'm just going to fire some questions off and hopefully get some answers from you.
Okay.
All right. Favorite Arizona food?
Mexican food here. Anything with carne asada, they do it really well.
All right. Sporting hero growing up?
Sporting hero growing up. Zinedine Zidane.
I'm a bit surprised, though, being from Mexico. You know, you chose a Frenchman.
That was the first World Cup I saw, man, 98. And I was like, wow, this guy's good. And that's what started me into soccer.
He was a baller, that's for sure. Your biggest mentor in career to date?
I can't pick one, man. I have four, if I'm honest. Kevin Schultz, Jim Snyder, current boss Jim Crumples, and Rob Harris.
All right, that works. Guilty music pleasure?
Latin music, especially reggaeton.
All right. If you could have been a pro in one sport, what would it be? I'm guessing I can assume from your earlier response, but I'll still let you go on this.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, soccer, football. All right. The world.
Yeah. Biggest fear?
Oof. This one touches deep, man. I'll make it brief. Just having kids is seeing your child or a loved one go through something where you cannot help them.
I hear you. Sporting highlight that you've been involved in?
100% the bubble, the Final Four, and getting to the national title with women's basketball this year.
Awesome. Favorite TV show?
I have a few, but I'll say Friends is one that I can go back to and rewatch over and over.
All right. What is that on now? I forget who paid the $200 million to get the streaming rights.
HBO Max currently has it.
Okay. All right.
My wife got me into that show, and yeah, it's pretty good, and I'll rewatch it.
Nice. All right. We kind of flip over a little bit more to the First Beat side of things. I'm always interested to hear how teams got started. So kind of how did you hear about us and what was the reason you decided to go with First Beat?
A lot of it came from the pandemic. Like I said, we had kids not doing anything for 5-6 months. So we felt as a staff that we needed something to help us transition these kids back into sports safely, into practice safely. So one of the things that was out there, well, is heart rate monitors. That's an easy one. Let's research them. We had experience using a couple other systems before and we weren't impressed. So Jim had me look up different ones. So we settled on First Beat. Like I said, we brought in quite a bit of units. And I think if I'm not mistaken, football had been using them right before us and they had a good experience. So we're like, well, hey, let's try First Beat. So that's what got us into it was we wanted to make a safe transition for our athletes. And we were going to base it off working heart rate during practices, during weightlifting sessions. After that, I set apart some units for women's basketball that I used throughout the whole year.
Okay, cool. And kind of on that same note, what are like the specific features? And if we stick kind of to women's basketball, what are the features or which data points are the most important for you on a daily basis?
On a daily basis, the ones I look at are going to be the load itself during the day or the TRIM score, but also acute to chronic ratio. The one I relate to the coaches more was obviously just kind of the weekly load and if they're going up, down. And eventually after a ton of practices, it was kind of nice because I was able to gather enough data points to know certain athlete is usually here, certain athlete is usually at this level. To see those deviations, you can individualize it in the reports. One of the coaches, Coach Salvo particularly, was interested in the acute to chronic. You know, once I explained to him what it is and how we can use that to our advantage. So I would say those were the three: TRIM score for the day, the weekly one, and then the acute to chronic.
Okay, excellent. And I know you had already mentioned it previously, like when you had the 2.5 weeks off, were you trying to get the high intensity? Did you ever use like TRIM per minute to try to see the intensity that you'd have of drills to try to match what you'd seen in games?
As the season went on, not as much, but only because during the first 2 months of practicing games, I documented like as many drills as I could. And what I did for those drills was I put in what the average TRIM per minute was. And that was a very valuable tool because I was able to tell Coach Adia, hey, you want to hide a drill that's going to get their heart rate up? Here's what we've seen in the past that got their heart rates up. So then she would kind of choose from that. I would still keep an eye on it on TRIM per minute, but I wasn't to a degree, I wasn't making notes of that data anymore because I knew what got their heart rates up, what didn't. But yeah, TRIM per minute. So yeah, I'll go back and say that was also actually one that was very, very crucial for the whole season.
So it sounds like with that catalog, you could almost look at a practice plan and have a pretty good idea what the load would be for that day.
Yes. And that's one of the things we talked about, hopefully going into next year, is be able to give the coaches a little bit, almost, if you will, like a menu. Obviously, I want them, that's their job to write out the practice plans. But if they ask for my input, like these are the drills that we want to get them into this heart rate zone. If we're trying to train maybe more aerobic or anaerobic system, here's what we want. And for them to have that ability to see, okay, we could do this, we can do that. It's been pretty valuable.
Nice. I have to say, you've gotten a lot out of the system for your first year. A lot of teams will just kind of record data that first year and look at it the next year. But you guys just went right away to implementing this data.
I appreciate that, Ben. But you know, I've had a lot of help, man. I think you guys have a great support system. And whenever I reached out, I got an answer. And some of this stuff came from speaking with just people at First Beat. And sucks, I can't remember who told me that, but they told me just document drills for the first couple of weeks and get an idea of the TRIM per minute. So that I use that, like I said, throughout the year, and it was huge.
I wish I could claim that, but I'm not going to. So have you kind of seen any, were there any differences that jumped out at you position-wise? I've been lucky enough to work with a lot of different sports. So in football, you're always looking at skill players versus linemen. Soccer, are we looking at attacking players, training load versus what the defenders might be? Did you see anything that jumped out at you as far as the positions on the court?
Yeah, it did. And definitely like our players that played the 1-2 were always going to be higher. Usually we're higher pretty much throughout the game. I can't say if it's specifically positional. It could be just the way we play, right? Because our one was Ari McDonald for most of the year, the entire year. So she played heavy minutes. So like I said, our 1 or 2 and Sam Thomas played a lot of minutes too. So she was always high. If you want to say positionally, yes, there was a difference between what we traditionally say guards and bigs. And like nowadays the game is so,
yeah,
there's almost like positionless basketball. Sometimes we would, sometimes we play big, and to an extent, yes, there's going to be some difference guards to bigs, but it almost depends on the game. It depends on the opponent and what type of approach you're going to have from the head coaches. Are they going to press more? Are they not? So yeah.
A lot of different factors then for sure.
Yeah.
And we haven't touched on this. So obviously great communication with the coaching staff and within the other sports med staffs. How about the athletes though? How did they accept this data? How did they interact with this data?
They eventually trusted it that this data was for their benefit. Mm-hmm. If you backtrack a little bit, that might not work if you don't build a good relationship with them. I would like to say I think most of the team, if not all, trusted what I was doing in the weight room and I was doing with the data for them. Yeah, they got annoyed as far as when I'd give them the heart rate monitors, especially towards the end of the season. But they knew what it was. They knew what it was for.
Yeah.
It's communicating, man. Like, it's a huge part of this field is being able to build relationships with your athletes, your coaches, and your support staff.
Mm-hmm. And one tool I've always used to help you guys out was I did have a picture of a belt that was labeled Curry on it because we've worked with the Warriors. So whenever any of your players said, oh, well, this is throwing off my shot, you just need to show them that picture and say, no, it's not.
You know, once they got going, they didn't even notice it. So it's more the annoyance of putting it on. I understand that.
Yeah. Perfect. Before we head out, just kind of one last question that may help some of our listeners. What would your top piece of advice be for any strength and conditioning coaches or sports scientists looking to make their way in the industry?
You have to be very persistent. You have to be patient as well. Become very good at listening and building relationships with people. My current boss, Jim Crumple, says this is becoming a people business. You know, treat people the right way, treat people the correct way. Earn their respect, and you will get athletes that will run through a wall for you, and you will get head coaches that listen to you, and you'll build good relationships with your athletic trainers to overall help out the athletes. Because we're here to help them succeed. My approach is I want them to succeed. I want them to take lessons that they can take into their life, not just the weight room, but things they can apply outside of the weight room one day.
Awesome. No, that's a great approach. Well, you're obviously, whatever you're doing is working out there in the desert. So, hey, I just want to thank you again for stopping by and spending some time with us. And obviously, we'll be watching you next year and best of luck for the next season.
No, thanks very much, Ben. It's been awesome and I appreciate this opportunity.
All right. That wraps things up for this episode. Thanks again, Jaime, for taking time out to speak with us. If you like this episode and want to hear more like it, make sure to subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the First Beat Sports Podcast. For more information about us and our sports monitoring systems, give us a call at 435-363-9533, or you can send us an email to sports@firstbeat.com. You can also visit us online at www.firstbeat.com. Thanks a lot for listening today, and don't forget to be with us on the next edition of the First Beat Sports Podcast.